Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan Projector Inspector Sachs. I hear you've been going in the trenches this week, Ethan, and checking out Team Handshake's blue-black deck.
Yeah, I tried. I feel like I don't have quite enough to report yet, maybe next week, but trying to dig up what's going on in these underrated strats. I've definitely played quite a bit of blue-black, but like it feels like a deck that you don't want to force, because if you do, you can really like you can get a powerful deck, but you can also like kind of just get a bunch of mediums and then end up like 1-2-ing, and then you're like, oh, well, this archetype stinks. It's like, yeah, but you forced it, so like what did you expect, you know? So I still feel like I have some more work in the lab to do.
Very responsible data collection from you. We're trying to get it to happen au natural there, just when you're supposed to. It's gonna take a while. You gotta let it marinate. You gotta do those drafts, gotta get the reps in.
But I do like it, I did, as we'll get to a little bit later, I qualified for day two of the Arena Open. We're recording in the midst of our day two runs here, but I qualified for day two with blue-black and looked like kind of not great. I mean, I had double Lazav, but then the rest was like just kind of filling it out with whatever, and it impressed. I mean, I think what blue-black has going for it is a bunch of cheap good rares that no one else wants. Like, you're not really splashing Lazav or Atrada in other decks, but in blue black like playing those cards on curve can just run away with the game.
Yeah, for sure.
How about you? How are things in the Magic world? Have you recovered from the con? Have you recovered from Chicago?
I'm still dragging a little bit, mostly because I was gone from school for a few days, so that means more work when I get back. And we just had a big band auction last night, a big fancy dinner fundraiser thing. So there's been a lot going on, as usual. I was qualifying for day two at 1 a.m. last night, you know, no big deal.
Wow.
But we got it done, which was a very nice feeling. I got back from MagicCon Chicago, and it was incredible. But I was very done with Magic. Like, we got back the next day, and I saw in Discord, Lord Tupperware is playing Magic Arena, and I messaged you, how on earth are you playing Magic right now?
I'm not well. I have a sickness, and I don't appreciate you calling me out. What do you mean? It's easy. After the con, after playing in paper, playing online, easy peasy. Barely have to pay attention.
That is true. Playing online is easy peasy. I do agree with that. So I took the week off. I didn't play Magic until Friday. Did some drafts on Friday evening, and then Arena Open, and now I'm ready to crush. My brain is fully refreshed.
I'm aghast. My jaw is on the floor. That's four days without playing Magic?
4 days without playing Magic. I went clean. Yeah. Whew. I got a little chip, you know?
I got a little chip. There's a shiver went up my spine. It doesn't feel right to me. All right, well, we've got a lot to talk about, a lot of varying segments before we dive into reviewing our day two draft ones here in the Arena Open. First things first, a little housekeeping. Let's chat about the Patreon page, patreon.com/LordsOfLimited, is where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. Everybody who gives back to the show via the Patreon gets access to the Discord. Weekends like this are where, I mean, the Discord's always great, but weekends like this is where it really shines, where people are comparing pools, getting feedback. You know, you just really have this great hive mind of limited degens in the Lords of Limited Discord to get feedback on. And then you get to cheer people on, the ones who do make day two, or like, it, you know, if people are just like, capped out at like three, it's very easy to like, if you're feeling like, but I could do a fourth. I think people really like, are like, look, like, get that life equity. You don't need to do like 12 runs. I don't know if you saw just Lola Man's tweet.
I did when I woke up this morning. And I was thinking, ooh, that could have been me.
Yeah. Thank God. I think he said he had 4 or 3 6-3s and then a bunch of 5-3s and took him like 11 attempts in 13 hours to qualify. And holy cow. I mean, more power to him, but also if you want to take care of yourself and stop, the Lord's Limited Discord will help you out there too. So a lot of great perks to as you move up the reward tier ranks on the Patreon page. And of course, we want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they join. This week, we're welcoming Jack, Simcrow, Eric, Brandon, Anthony, Quillworth, and Kyle. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah, cannot say thank you enough and truly mean it every week, but just like so fresh on my mind after Chicago. Like the Lords of Limited community is incredible, whether you're a listener, whether you're in the Patreon, whatever. Thank you for being a part of the community and for listening to the show every week and giving back when you can. Truly cannot say thank you enough. Show is also brought to you by an unnamed company that could be your company sponsoring this beautiful Lords of Limited podcast. So insert your name here, any potential advertising sponsors out there, and we could direct listeners to that unnamed place to get those booster boxes to store in their closet.
Yeah, we're on the market. We're free agents at the moment for the booster box closet collection. Another very cool event happened this weekend in addition to the Arena Open, a little fundraiser, a charity event called Vintage versus Type 1, which was a fundraiser for Type 1 diabetes research. As folks, I assume most of our listeners know, I was diagnosed with Type 1 a little over 2 years ago. Weird, scary, surprise visit to the ER. Have it under control. And Brian David Marshall, who was on the Pro Tour coverage, Magic historian for, I feel like, couple of decades. He's also a type 1 diabetic, and he organized this awesome event where folks hopped in a vintage cube draft queue and then got to draft a deck via a stipulation. People could pay donations to, you know, up the number of cards in your deck, reduce the number of cards in your deck, add power to it, whatever, like lots of stipulations there. And then face off against someone else. So yesterday was Marshall Sutcliffe versus Paul Cheon, and then myself versus Reed Duke. And then today there's two more matches as well. Really awesome event. They raised over $10,000 already yesterday. Ben, thank you for donating a Mox to my deck. It did not show up. It was shy in my two games against Reed. So my stipulation that I got was they were all you picked one of 8 Billy Joel songs.
And okay.
That reveal.
I did see that. I wasn't able to watch the event because I had people in town and then was playing table tennis. Like, I had stuff going on. But I was very curious because I did see that on Twitter.
Well, so apparently, so BDM, Brian David Marshall's brother, passed away from complications of type 1. And Billy Joel was his favorite music artist. So this was sort of an homage to him. So you picked a song and then that revealed a stipulation for you.
Okay.
So I picked Still Rock and Roll to Me, because part of it, like, I was going to pick Big Shot because I like that song a lot. But I was like, is Big Shot going to be like, I have to draft like
the most expensive thing.
Yeah. So I was like, I don't know. So I'm curious to see what Big Shot is. So I picked Still Rock and Roll to Me, which was if there's an artifact, you get Karn, Scion of Urza in your deck already. And if there's an artifact in the pack, you have to take it. And I was like,
channel your inner LSV Talarian Academy, huh?
I know, but no Talarian Academy. But people did donate to give me a Mishra's Workshop and an Urza's Saga. So this is pretty cool.
So my Mox was good.
Your Mox was great.
I didn't even know.
Yeah. I mean,
you couldn't draw it.
You knew that Mox was going to be good. But then, so Reed picked We Didn't Start the Fire, which was, as you might expect, it was like your deck has Sulfuric Vortex in it.
Okay.
And anytime there's the word fire in a card, you have to take it.
Okay.
Fire's not in the name of many cards in the vintage queue. So Reed basically just got to draft a nutso mono red aggro deck.
Okay.
Yeah. So I lost.
So it sounds like you lost then from that tone of voice.
Two speedy games. Yeah, because it was like the mirror. I was mono red with a bunch of artifacts, and he was mono red with a bunch of burn spells.
Good cards.
Yeah. Okay. So we lost that one, but it was for a good cause. It was very fun. Ben, we got some Chicago cleanup to do here.
Yeah, just like not on the official live stage show or pre-Chicago. First of all, I just want to say huge congrats to you for getting on the PT, playing on the PT, doing an awesome job, getting on the news desk. Like, you crushed it all weekend. And I don't know, feels weird to say I'm proud of you, but very proud of you.
Thanks, buddy.
Thankful to have you as a co-host on the podcast. I want to shout out to William at the end of the weekend for getting a Beta Forest my way. A year or two ago, I had started collecting beta basics for drafting, still working on it, and I'm now plus one Beta Forest. So thank you, William. Great person. Very fun to talk to. The Lords of Limited log that you made, the video log, folks haven't checked this out yet. It is on YouTube. You have got to check it out if you want to see what a Magic Con is like, or if you enjoy the podcast. I'm sure you will enjoy a behind-the-scenes look at what we did all weekend at Magic Con Chicago. So that's on the Lords of Limited YouTube channel. If you're not already subscribed there, what are you doing? YouTube.com/@LordsofLimited. Get it done. I also just want to say the live show was incredible. Thank you very much to Wizards for having us, Greg Collins, Josh Lee Quire for putting us in touch with Greg Collins. That was a blast. One of the highlights of the weekend, for sure, and one of the coolest things I've done. And you can find that recording on Magic's official YouTube page. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I'll make sure to put links to all that stuff in the notes where you download the episode.
So if you have not been to a Magic Con yet, this is my first Magic Con since they've started combining them with PTs, and you love Magic, you should make it a point to go. Don't even necessarily have to be a limited whatever. Just if you love Magic, the art, Commander, Constructed, whatever it is, like, it was an incredible weekend. Just being around that many people that cared about the same thing as you and a bunch of dentists, like, it was awesome.
Yes, Dentist Con happening in our hotel the week prior. Nice overlap.
And we kind of already shouted out the Lords of Limited community, but also our Twitch community and our Twitch friends that we were able to hang out with all weekend, like, truly bumped that weekend way up. And got a question for you, Ethan. Magic Con Amsterdam, is it happening? Get a little babysitter for Jonah?
Oh, man, that's so tough. No, I feel like it's got to be a no for me at the moment, but we'll see.
At the moment?
At the moment.
It seems like that for me.
What do you mean?
That my hope's going to keep up.
That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to string you along. That's the strategy.
The hook.
I mean, it's a lot. It's a lot to, you know, think about doing that in whatever. What is it? 4 months? 5 months? And no, less. It's in June, right?
It's in June, June 28th, hashtag summer.
Oh, that feels like a big no for me, but I encourage you to go. You don't need me. You can take the training wheels are off. Be free.
We'll see. I don't know. Traveling to Europe alone, I might be roping my brother Adam into going with
me. Oh, there you go. Oh, my gosh. A little Euro trip with the Wernie boys? That sounds great.
A lot of us spend our lives wishing we had more time. The question is, time for what? If time was unlimited, how would you use it?
Aside from one more draft, you mean?
Yes, aside from one more draft.
That is a good question. The best way to squeeze that special thing into your schedule is to know what's important to you and make it a priority.
Therapy can help you find what matters so you can do more of it. It could be something simple like exercise or reading a book, or tackling a lingering personal project you've been meaning to get started.
Therapy has really helped me to try to dig beyond just the things that I want or expect, and to try to figure out why I want them and what it would mean for me if I got them.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge.
Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/lords today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lords. And now, back to the show. Well, speaking of Josh Lee Quai, who has been just a delightful champion of our show for a long time when we were just starting out, and put us in touch, as you said, with Greg Collins for getting the live show up on the main stage in Chicago. He sent me an email, and I was expecting the beginning part of this, just like, hey, it was great to like see you and great to like see you guys up on the stage, blah, blah, blah.
And no, then get down to business.
But that was like the first two sentences of the email. And then the rest was a very unexpected, strategic, limited question, which I was like delighted by. And I thought, I sent it to you. I was like, I think this is a good question. Like, let's just do it on the show. I asked Josh if he was okay with it. So here we are. So he said, I'm writing because I drafted MKM last night and realized there's a scenario I've been running into quite often that I'm not really sure how to navigate. It's when we're drafting these aggressive white-based decks with a ton of two drops, I'm often not 100% sure the proper order I should be deploying them. For instance, I was on the play. It was turn two. My opponent went land, go. I draw my card for turn. I have a planes on the battlefield from turn one and the following hand. So two lands, it looks like, a mountain and a plains, two tricks, auspicious arrival and on the job, and three creatures, Market Watch Phantom, the 2/2 that can gain flying if you play something that has power 2 or less. Reckless Detective, the red 0/3 that when it attacks, you can rummage or sack an artifact. And if you do, it gets +2/+0 and you draw a card. And Red Herring, the one on a red 2/2 with haste that's also a clue and it attacks each turn of Fable. What 2-drop should I play and why? Found myself going round and round in my head and not really being confident with any answer. Could play the Reckless Detective to start rummaging. Could play the Marker Watch Phantom to guarantee flying for the next 2 turns. Or I could play the Red Herring to get those 2 points of damage in right now. What would you do here? And then an addendum of, what if instead of the Reckless Detective, I had an Innocent Bystander? So first thing I want to say is, thank you, Josh, for the question, for the podcasting fodder. And I want to pose to you that I kind of want to start doing this kind of thing as a weekly segment, if we can. Like some, because he made a point of like, I feel like the focus on our show and on limited shows in general is often on the drafting. That's like the easiest thing to be able to talk about. It's where like things often shift. As we've tried in the past with What's the Play episodes, those are just really hard to translate, right? Translate complicated board states to an audio medium. And so we've sort of shied away from that over the years. But I think maybe sprinkling in just like a what's the play like this, a deck building question, a mulligan decision, a sideboarding decision, something non-draft related each week that we can just sort of pepper into the show. What do you think?
I'm in for it. And as long as it's small, some of the danger with that stuff is like there's so much context needed.
Yeah, you're like, okay, so my opponent's at 19 life. We're on turn 7. The graveyard is like, you just can't do that.
Right. So like early game sequencing decisions, Keeper Mulligans certainly would be good ones. Yeah, I'm in for it for sure.
Okay, so great. And now I want to return to Josh's question. What is your sequencing and why?
Well, I responded to you and then I was expecting some confirmation, either yeah, I agree, or a no, you're an idiot, but I got nothing. So I'm just wondering if you're going to roast me here on air when I propose what I would do. So
yeah, I'm ready to roast you.
Basically, you're trying to decide between Market Watch Phantom, the 2/2, Reckless Detective, and Red Herring, how you want to order the sequencing of those three creatures. And my thought is I want to lead on Market Watch Phantom for a couple of reasons. One, I know I can trigger it the next 2 turns with Reckless Detective and Red Herring. So that's going to get me in 2 guaranteed damage each turn. Whereas it's tempting, I think, to want to lead on Reckless Detective because you can then start, you know, getting those triggers, sculpting your hand, whatever. But I feel less interested in that because my hand is great. Like if I had something that I needed to happen with my hand, then I would certainly be leading on Reckless Detective. But as it is, my plan or my hope for this hand, like the curve I would want to draw out for the next few turns, I think this is the reason to not lead on Red Herring.
Right.
So the reason to not lead on Red Herring is you could be forced into firing off Auspicious Arrival earlier than you want to, which you really want to avoid, I think, with this hand, because this is a bonkers curve. So if you lead on Phantom, you're getting in 2 guaranteed damage in the air the next turn and the next turn. And then so you already have 3 lands. So what you need to do to really get the nuts with this hand is hit a land in the next 2 turns. So my hope would be to go Market Watch Phantom and then the following turn play Reckless Detective and then hope I've hit a land. And then if I've hit my 4th land, then that next turn you can go Red Herring, swing with all 3 and have Auspicious Arrival up to protect either one of your creatures. But what I really want to do is try to not force myself into a spot where I feel like I need to prematurely use Auspicious Arrival. That's the +2/+2 combat trick.
Correct. Yeah. I told Josh that I would lead on Reckless Detective, but I think the differences between Detective and Phantom are small enough that you just want to highlight of like, you're choosing between those two and you are not playing Red Herring. And this is like something that I think took me a little bit to figure out, but like the damage output from Red Herring really isn't going to be that much. You sort of think it will be because you're like, oh, I'm going to get in for 2 right now. And then I can attack with it again next turn while developing my board. But they're just so likely to play something that's going to trade off with it. And so your damage output is still only 2 if you play it now versus if you play something that can get in the following turn, like Detective, which likely will be able to have a profitable attack next turn because of its 3 toughness, right? Assume your opponent is going to play, you know, some 2 power thing, some 2/1, 2/2 on turn 2 when you pass, your Detective will have a profitable attack. Then you can play Phantom. Same thing you can talk about with playing Phantom because you're going to play Detective. You're likely to find, you know, you're going to launch it in the air. It's going to attack past most things. Your opponent's not going to be playing some 2-2 flyer on turn two. And then Red Herring comes in and is immediately impactful on turn four, and you have Auspicious Arrival to protect whatever, like, they're going to have to block. And so you have Auspicious Arrival to protect whatever they do end up blocking. The reason I like Detective personally on turn two here is because of what you said of, like, you really, the only thing, this hand is nuts. The only thing it's missing is a fourth land. And so I like having Detective now to give myself two shots because, or is it three shots, I guess, at finding that fourth land? Because I really want to make sure I have land four in play on turn four pre-combat. Like, I don't want to be in a spot where I'm like, oh, I'm only on three lands and I can attack with Detective and get that rummage, but I won't be able to play that land until main phase two on turn four, which means the double spelling potential of Herring attacking plus plus holding up Auspicious Arrival, that possibility is gone. So I like playing Detective here personally, but I think it's a little bit splitting hairs between those two.
You think you just have, it's likely enough to have attacks that you're not worried about with the evasiveness of Market Watch. Like, what if your opponent plays a 1-3? You're missing out on so much damage. That's the thing to me. Like, if your opponent plays Gravestone Strider or whatever, like, you want to end the game. I mean, V2Gazi, Inspector, Bricks, anything.
Anything.
There are cards running around.
Seasoned Consultant.
That stop Reckless Detective, that don't stop Market Watch Phantom. That was my thought. But that's what you're trying to, then that's the decision you're making. You're either, do I want to give myself the maximum chance to push damage, or do I want to give myself the maximum chance to hit that fourth land drop? Mm-hmm. I think that is the consideration.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. I guess it does matter. He doesn't say here. I guess it does matter, like, or does it matter? I mean, if they lead on Plains, then, like, Seasoned Consultant is a possibility. Whereas, like, if they lead on Mountain, like, there's not a lot of 1-3s in red, you know?
Right, sure.
That's pretty, again, small considerations there. Yeah, I stand by Reckless Detective. There's also, like, I mean, I guess they're snap blocking with a 1-3, like, 1-3 derp, and, like, if you have a trick, good for you. But, yeah, you're right. So, yeah, you potentially lose out on some damage, but you also potentially lose out on hitting your fourth land on time if you play Phantom.
Right. And then I think the other thing that's worth noting with haste creatures, like, it's tempting to say, well, I need to play my haster first so that I get the maximum haste value, but you get the burst damage from the haste on whatever turn you play it. So, like, a lot of times it's right to do your haste creature last pending other things.
Yes. No, totally agree. So thank you, Josh, for the question. And I think thank you for the inspiration for future segments like this. I think these little puzzles are fun. In Paper Magic, there is no shortage of accessories. Playmats, sleeves, deck boxes, dice, life pad, you name it.
But there aren't a ton of accessories for the Magic player. Unless you want to roll up to a tournament in a full suit of armor, dragon scales, or some other sweet cosplay, there's not many options.
Not true! MeUndies has tons of great gifts for all gamers. You just might not be able to see them from across the table. I was rocking my LOL gear on the outside and my MeUndies underneath at the Pro Tour in Chicago.
MeUndies has something for everyone, from all-black classics to fun expressive print and sizes ranging from extra small to 4XL, guaranteeing a flattering cut for everybody.
This seriously is the most comfortable underwear I've ever worn. The fabric is soft, breathable, stretchy,
and as cozy as a Pack One Pick One Izoni in the Arena Open.
Plus, they use sustainably sourced materials and work with partners that care for their workers. Good things come in big packages and MeUndies. Get 20% off your first order plus free shipping at MeUndies.com/LOL.
That's MeUndies.com/LOL for 20% off plus free shipping. MeUndies, comfort from the outside in.
Should we chat about some underrated cards?
We should. First to the list, this is a new addition as of this morning, because I think both you and I are crazy high on this card, and I don't think the rest of the world is, and I'm pretty sure we're right. This is Projector Inspector. 2 and a blue, 3/2 ETBs, you draw, discard, and then anytime a detective enters the battlefield, you loot as well. This is better than Rafine's Informant. It's that type of card, but, like, way better, because it's continual. When you have Projector Inspector in a deck that is built around it at all, you get so much control over what your draw is.
Yeah. Oh, I think it's fantastic. I was surprised, you know, you alluded to the team handshake, blue-black tech. I was surprised that they shouted out disliking cards, like, or the being lower on cards like Projector Inspector because of the spot on the curve that they occupy. But I just think Projector Inspector is so strong. Like the loot that it immediately gives you, plus the possibility for future loots, as we'll see in my day two draft one deck, it's just phenomenal. Like that kind of card selection for free, right? That the free loot that gives you is, you like, it can't be understated how powerful that is.
And once you get two free loots, like, you're in the territory of, what is it called, Steam Core Scholar or whatever, the 2 and a blue 2/2 flying vigilance, draw two cards, discard two cards. I mean, it's not that powerful, but it's like close to that powerful, and that card's very good.
Yeah, big agree. I was just checking.
It fuels your graveyard for collect evidence. It does so. It's like ties the room together for so much of what blue, like how blue supports other colors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, slap a thinking cap on it. Now it's a 4/4.
Yeah,
for one mana. Yeah, yeah. Projector Inspector, great. I do still feel best blue common for me. Like, yes. Not close.
Yes. Next up, we've got a big riser up over the past week for me. This is Make Your Move, 2 and a white for an instant. Destroy target artifact, enchantment, or creature with power 4 or greater. This card just hits so many things you want to hit. Like, totally fine main decking the first copy in white decks.
Yeah, I think we'd been on pick your poison main deck in green decks. You know, these are, I think, with the caveat of if you're low on interaction, I think playing a card like Make Your Move or Pick Your Poison in their respective decks is totally fine main decking the first copy, because in the spots where it doesn't have targets, you're probably doing okay.
Yeah, and I think, I don't even know if I would make the caveat of light on interaction. I think the first copy is just pretty good if you really want to be able to interact with those types of things. Mm-hmm. Like, people are running around with makeshift bindings everywhere. Blowing that up is such a beating. The cases are enchantments, like broken artifacts running around. There's build around enchantments. I have just loved these cards.
Yeah.
And anytime Pick Your Poison gets a flyer creature, like, it's just so game swinging.
It's the new tech for Pioneer, for getting the Vein Ripper, getting the 6/5 ward off the board. Single mana, make them sack a flyer.
There you go.
Yeah. Next up is Museum Nightwatch. I remember a very handsome co-host of this podcast being high on this in the crash course, and someone else just telling him how wrong he was. But now it's on this list.
It's on this list. Yeah, that handsome co-host was very right. And I humbly apologize for slandering his good card evaluation skills. This Museum Nightwatch is the 3/2 that dies into a 2/2 detective. This is in the vein of, you know, Loxodon Eavesdropper or Cold Case Cracker. Like, it's on par with those cards, and it's pretty annoying when you go to trade morphs. And like, for me, I just forget about this one. and I trade morphs, and then they flip it up and they're left with a 2/2, and you just feel like, ugh, like, yeah. I mean, you're getting attacked. That's the problem, is you think you were the beatdown, and then all of a sudden you're getting attacked back on the crackback. That's what's been the kicker for me, why I've been so impressed with it. Like, every time I get got by it, the script of the game gets totally turned on its head.
Yeah, it changes the tempo. You steal the play a little bit when you get to flip that up. On the job here in all caps, 2 white, +2/+1 to all your creatures at instant speed plus investigate. I mean, like, it's kind of crazy that we need to talk about this card, but I do feel like we do.
Well, so I think, first of all, it and Out Cold were kind of comparable for me, like, in the 4-drop slot, but on the job is significantly better than Out Cold, I think. It's just impossible to play around. I mean, like, you kind of can, but like, most of the time your opponent could just flash you the on the job because it's really obvious whenever your opponent has it, and you're still like, it's just such a deflating card to play against. And when you're the person with it and you're swinging out, you're like, great, like, math is for blockers.
I don't know if my opponent earlier this week intended to do this, but I had someone who, I think they had like 5 creatures in play. They like snap clicked 2 attackers and then like limped the other 3 into the red zone. And that action, like, usually if people just go like snap, swing all, and they have on the job mana, it's definitely the first card that comes to my mind.
Yeah.
The limping across the finish line red zone thing. And then I was just like, well, it can't be on the job, but then it was.
They like, got you.
I was like, that's, I don't know if that was intentional or not, but I'm definitely adding that to my arsenal. I thought that was great. Next up, we have Reasonable Doubt. Speaking of tempos, one in a blue instant counter target spell, unless its controller pays two and you can suspect up to one target creature. I mean, it's Quench.
It's Quench, but it's been good.
Yeah.
For me, against me, I've played with it a little bit more this week. The one bummer about it is if your opponent sticks some disguise creatures before you get this used, you can kind of get in trouble. But the nice thing about it is so many of the things that have ETB make a clue in the format. Like, you can nab them before you get two for one by a lot of the cards. And stops bomb rares, like holding this up when your opponent's on five mana, six mana, those critical turns when they're going to be slamming the Ezreums and the whatever.
Izoni.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I was just thinking the Spider Lord.
Yeah.
Yeah. Being able to nab those cards before they get their ETBs or before they're impossible to deal with. I've liked Reasonable Doubt a fair bit.
I agree. And back to the first card on this list, pairs great with Projector Inspector in that, like, if you feel like I've sort of missed my window for this card, well, you've got an inherent looter in your deck to just get rid of it when you feel like it's not the thing for you, or if you need to play to the board more.
Next card on the list, you've been doubting, Basilica Stalker. This is five and a black for, no, yeah,
five, yeah, and, a five black. And a black. It's very expensive.
Five and a black for the 3/4 flyer. Whenever it does damage to the opponent, you gain a life and surveil one, and it's got disguise for four and a black. So I've just been really impressed by this body. If you can get it flipped up on turn five, get a hit in, it's a kind of a problem for your opponent. They have to take time out to deal with it. It's hard to block. It dodges a lot of the cheap removal. They have to spend real cards stopping it. I don't know. I've liked this in black decks a fair bit. It's been a problem every time I've seen it on the battlefield for me or my opponent.
Yeah, I've been, I think in, like, there's, because I'm looking down the list of these cards and there's a lot of them where I'm like, I'm finally on board. Like, it took me a while and I feel like I'm getting there with Stalker. I still don't think it's anything more than just like filler plus.
Filler plus, but I think also I've been playing in a lot of you in these Insidious Roots, Chalk Outline, Collect Evidence decks. You want six mana.
Yes.
Disguise creatures to play, to like trade and then fill your graveyard with Collect Evidence 6. And I think it is one of the best of those options, because I also feel fine just like playing it, flipping it up on five and, you know, putting my opponent in a tough spot too. If it doesn't make its way to the graveyard, it is one of the ones I am happiest to have on the battlefield.
Well, and to that, I think it's specifically in the Black Green Roots Chalk Outline deck. The Surveil 1 is relevant as well, because that then can help continue to, even if it doesn't go to the yard itself, it can continue to fuel other things going there for your creatures to leave.
Yeah.
This is my beefy disguised creature of choice. Avenger at Large is so good. This is 4 and a red, 5/4. When it ETBs or flips up, if can flip up for 4 and a red as well, target creature you control gets +2/+0 until end of turn. This is just a beating. So I don't know what else to say. It's just a big beating and is good in both scenarios. Like, you're happy to like flip this up on five mid combat. You're happy to curve into this on five, and like a 5/4 on blocks that turn while you're also pushing damage is good in a race. I think this card's great.
Yeah, card's very impressive. Quick arena open story in my run that I queued for. I read my opponent. I really stopped taking damage. They had a pyrotechnic performer face up, and we were kind of racing, and I like pumped the brakes because I didn't want to, if they had double Offender at Large face down, which they did, when it flips face up with pyrotechnic performer and pumps itself, you take seven to the dome. So I had like pumped the brakes when I was at 15 life. They flipped up their first one, Offender at Large, flipped up the second one, Offender at Large, and I won at one life because I had like made sure I took no more damage, because they were playing very fishily. Like, the only way it made sense for them to be playing the way they were was if both their face down cards were
like, they were just desperate to push damage.
Yeah, just absolutely desperate to push damage.
Wow, good read. Very good, cool read. Game. Best green common coming up next.
I am on board with your take where you just want to be playing Rubble Belt Maverick in green decks. I think it's green for the 1/1, ETB Surveil 2. Then you can pay green to exile from your graveyard to put a +1/+1 counter on something. Card's just good. And when my opponent plays Rubble Belt Maverick on turn one, I'm kind of like, ugh, It's gonna be annoying, gonna be a problem. It's a good glue card for the Chalk Outline Insidious Roots decks, but it also just is kind of good enough to just play in green decks and get on the board on turn one.
It's a buffalo, right? Like, in no matter what green deck,
a small buffalo, it's a buffalo wing.
It's a buffalo wing. That's true. No matter what kind of deck you're in, you're gonna be able to use pieces of it. I had a question about it on stream this week of like, is Rubble Butt Maverick good in any green deck? And I'm always like, well, is it good in aggro decks? And it just is, because you're getting, whether it's a speed bump for your opposition, the Surveil 2 is likely going to feel like somewhat of a draw card. If you have any collect evidence in your deck, it maybe is fueling that. It can play in tandem with a double block or whatever. It's a body for on the job, and then it's in the bin and you get to bump up a creature a little later on. It just does so much for the low cost of one mana.
Yep.
Crowd Control Warden. This is a card I'm finally on board with. Took me too long. Finally it's on board.
So good. This is three green white for the 4/4 ETB with a +1/+1 counter for each creature you control. It's got Disguise for three Selesnya. This card's huge. And yeah, it's very difficult to play against, because you don't want to chump block it. But then if you don't chump block it, your opponent doesn't have to flip it up. Right. And notice I'm saying as the defender, because that's how I'm playing against this card all the time. But your opponent doesn't have to flip it up. But then when they do decide to flip it up, you take 8 or you take 7. Like, mm-hmm. it's really tough to deal with, and plays really well with Colossal Strength. What is I need to learn the name of that card. The +3/+3 in trample. What is it?
Fanatical Strength. There it
there
is.
There we go.
Yeah, it's incredible with that card. It's just huge. And I think, while it's not one of the disguised creatures you're like hoping to play as an off color one, you just can. Like, if you're in red white beats and you're a little low on threats or whatever, this is just a totally fine thing to slide into the 3-drop slot. And then, oops, I'm like doing my attack all thing, and then they don't block it, or they do and I flip it up on turn 5, and it's just a problem.
Also really good with Escape Tunnel. Really good with Escape Tunnel.
I have not done that yet. Yeah, I haven't done the like, you're at 5 and Escape Tunnel plus Shenanigans wins me the game.
I did that a lot last week when we were in Chicago. I had not done it prior to that, and I did it 4 or 5 times in Chicago.
Nice. Talk to me about Case File Auditor.
It's 2 and a white 1/4 that lets you look at 6 and put a case from the top in your hand. And then whenever you solve a case, you also get to look at the top 6 and try to find another case. I think for messier drafts, I don't think this card's a high pick, but if you're in a messy draft and you maybe have a couple good cases, this card is splash worthy, I think, because there's a lot of good green cases as well. Certainly, I had this in a deck with Case of the Locked Hot House and a couple other cases, but just it digs you towards some of your best cards, maybe in a draft that went a little wonky. Just a card to look out for. It was not on my radar at all, and it is now on my radar.
Bucket list for me still is Case File Auditor plus High Alert from the list.
That's nice.
Lets your creatures deal damage equal to their toughness. Case File Auditor can find High Alert because it's an enchantment. I want to do that. Repulsive Mutation is next. This is X green blue for an instant. You get to put X+1/+1 counters on up to one target creature and then counter target spell unless its controller pays mana equal to the highest power among creatures you control. Is it possible for this card ever not to be a massive beating?
No, you have when you're at parity or ahead with this card in hand, the game is done. Like done. it's like Armageddon levels of good when you're ahead. It's incredible, and it still goes way, way, way too late.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've just played with it more the past week, and every time I play with it, I'm more impressed by it.
Yeah, it's a massive 2-for-1. I was doing a coaching session this week, and someone had drafted 2 of these fairly early in the first half of the draft. And then I was like, this is your plan now. Like, you just take like any derpy 2, like Bubble Smugglers are great here. Like, now you're just like, you want to get on board early, and then Repulsive Mutation is going to take you over the finish line.
Yep. Lastly, Repeat Offender. This is 1 and a black for the 2/1, and you can pay 2 and a black to suspect it. And if it's suspected, it gets a +1/+1 counter. I think this card is just a very good 2-drop in black decks. I've really liked it. I've been impressed with it. It plays defense well early in the game and then turns into a real problem late in the game. I think best home is blue-black decks that want to leave their mana up.
Oh, that's a good call. Yeah. I also think it's just like totally fine in red black, because when you get the problem with this card in terms of when you're beating down with it is you never really want to spend 3 mana to suspect it.
And that gives you ways to suspect it without spending right. 3.
So if you have ways to suspect it without investing additional mana into it, and then it's just the 3 mana pump, like it really does. But you're like, oh man, I am going to have to deal with this. I have definitely lost to my share of 6/5 repeat offenders.
Yeah, it's very good with Clandestine Smuggler or whatever that card is, the 3/2 that can suspect a creature.
Yeah. We chatted a bit about our journeys for day one. Shall we take a look at some draft logs for day two of the Arena Open?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. I think mine is a little less contentious, perhaps. I'll use the word to tease yours.
Wow. I feel like I just got sent a timeout.
Yeah, you're in trouble, mister. Pack one, pick one. Wah-wah. No good... real great rare open for us. Illicit Masquerade is here, 3 and a black enchantment. When it ETBs, you put an imposter counter on each creature you control, and then whenever a creature you control with an imposter counter on it dies, exile it, return up to one other target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. I don't think this card, I've seen this card go off. I don't think this is a good card.
Do you know what it's super sick with?
What is it super sick with?
Insidious Roots and Chalk Outline, because the creature that dies hits the graveyard. Oh, goes and to then... exile, and then the one that leaves the graveyard comes back. I popped off with this in a draft in a Chalk Outline Insidious Roots deck. It was super fun, but I generally agree this card is hot garbage.
Yeah, if I'm just messing around, maybe a pack one, pick one, like see what we can do. But in a draft like the Arena Open or the PT, I'm not interested. It's a pretty weak pack. I think it really comes down to Perimeter Enforcer is the uncommon here. 1 and a white, 1/1 flying lifelink. Whenever another detective enters the battlefield under your control or a detective is turned face up that you control, it gets +/+1 until end of turn.
That's you'd rather open a bomb rare, but I feel good with packs like this where there's just a clear pick.
Yes.
And I know I have no other recourse I could have taken. Like my draft is starting this way. It's a very nice, safe feeling. I have no responsibility here.
I agree, right? I'm not even being put in a spot where it's like Perimeter Enforcer versus Reckless Detective. And then I have to be like, okay, am I going to fight for white? Am I going to avoid white and regret it? Like, yeah, it's just, this is the clear pick. Let's move on to pick two. Pack one, pick two, have some options. For me, it came down immediately to Makeshift Binding in the common slot. That's the 2 and a white enchantment. ETBs exile target creature and opponent controls until Makeshift Binding leaves the battlefield and you gain 2 life. As like the best follow-up, and then as the best card in the pack, I think Torch the Witness, X and a red sorcery, deals 2x damage to target creature if excess damage was dealt to that creature this way. Investigate. Do you agree that if it was pack one, pick one, do you take Torch?
Oh, pack one, pick one, you 1000% take Torch, yeah.
And then is the gap small enough that you would take Binding here as a follow-up to Enforcer?
For me, it is, but I could see a lot of people disagreeing and saying Torch is better enough, but I think they're similar types of cards. Like they're both going to deal with about anything for 3 mana, and Makeshift Binding's in a color with Perimeter Enforcer. To me, I like the Binding pick, but I do think it's very close, and I can see people going the other way.
And then pack one, pick three is interesting. So first, the first thing that jumps out to me is there's a Jace Wielder of Mysteries. It's the 1 triple blue planeswalker from the list. I thought, again, it's like the Illicit Masquerade, like this would be fun, but in a draft like this, I don't think I want to take a triple blue card as a follow-up to my 2 white, you know, tempo cards. It came down to me between 2 uncommons. There's no white cards that I really wanted to take. There's Make Your Move. There's Not On My Watch. That's the 1 and a white exile target attacking creature uncommon. And then Granite Witness is the 2 white blue, 3/2 flying vigilance artifact detective. It has disguise for... Azorius hybrid, and when it's turned face up, you can tap or untap another target creature. I like that card a lot, but I felt like the and sort of keeps me mono white in a way. Like I would play this in any white deck, but I felt like the power level gap between this and the 2 uncommons I was choosing between was too great. So those 2 uncommons were Exit Specialist, 1 and a blue for a 2/1, can't be blocked by creatures with power 3 or greater. Has disguise for 1 and a blue, and when it's turned face up, return another target creature to its owner's hand. And a Killer Among Us, 4 and a green for an enchantment. When it ETBs, you make a human, a merfolk, and a goblin token. Then you choose one secretly, and you can sack Killer Among Us. Reveal the chosen creature type. If target attacking creature token is the chosen type, put 3 +/+1 counters on it, and it gains death touch until end of turn.
This is a tough choice.
It is a tough choice. It's one, like, I feel like I had your voice in my head of like, I think this is just close, and you're just sort of saying something about the direction you're gonna go, you want to go, you envision going with this pick.
Yeah, I think I would have landed on A Killer Among Us here, but like, you could tell me I'm getting Exit Specialist and I wouldn't be disappointed. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's very close. I don't know what's right here.
Yeah, I took Exit Specialist, I think a slight, like a couple things here. One, blue-white is where Perimeter Enforcer is going to be its best.
Yeah.
Exit Specialist is a detective, already pairs well with the Enforcer. I think getting a two-drop when you can is like really important. Like, just starting off with two premium two-drops felt great to me. And like, Killer Among Us, I just knew in my, like, in my heart, if I took a Killer Among Us, I was gonna end up in a messy, soupy pile. Like, I was gonna go like base green, I'm splashing binding, and I'm gonna give up on Enforcer. Like, it's very unlikely if I take Killer Among Us, I'm gonna end up in green white beats, you know?
I agree. I kind of like the Exit Specialist pick. I just don't know if I would have been brave enough to make it. I don't think I would have been. I do kind of like it, though.
Yeah. So I took Exit Specialist. And then immediately, no white cards, no blue cards. There are some blue gold cards that we'll choose between, but it's all black and red. So I feel pretty, I'm like a little nervous. The nerves will go away as we get down to it. But the picks are between, there's Gadget Technician, the 2 blue red 3/2. When it's flipped up or when it ETBs, you make a 1/1 Thopter and has disguise for is it hybrid. Could take that and play it in a blue white deck, but seems like a bit of a hit. And then I was picking between Evidence Examiner, green blue 2/2. At the beginning of combat on your turn, you can collect evidence for, and whenever you collect evidence, you investigate. And our fave, Aftermath Analyst, 1 and a green, 1/3 when it ETBs, mill 3. You can pay 3 and a green to sack it, return all land cards from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped.
Yeah, you took Evidence Examiner here, and I think I would land on that as well. But I think a couple things worth noting here.
Yeah.
Pre-play boosters,
mm-hmm.
this pack would have been like abandon ship on white, abandon yes. ship on white. And I think with the start that you have, certainly if blue flows, like there's a world where you're still able to be blue-white detectives. And also this pack could just be an anomaly, could yes. be a gut check. And like, it's really important, I think, in play boosters to not, like, my instinct when I see this pack is to panic.
Right.
I have to fight that so hard,
and years and years of panic,
right? Like, just be cool. We don't know what the pack collation was like, just see what keeps coming. And that's why I like the Evidence Examiner pick. I think it sets you up to pivot off white
mm-hmm.
the best if you have to, but I think it's important to remind yourself, hey, I don't necessarily have to pivot off white here.
That is exactly my thought. And a breath of fresh air or a sigh of relief when we get to pick 5, because there are white cards, there are blue cards, and there is a Granite Witness again, the 4 mana 3/2 flying vigilance artifact gargoyle detective. And I think that is the clear best card in the pack and certainly the best card for my deck.
Mm-hmm.
And then the underrated cards flow. Projector Inspector, pick 6.
This is inexcusable. Inexcusable.
And Projector Inspector, pick 7. And at that point, I'm basically just like, in my mind, I'm 90% to be blue white at this point, but there's still a world where I could go blue green, drop the Enforcer, try and splash makeshift binding. Projector Inspectors are still good in, you know, blue green for the looting, collecting evidence, etc.
But so another thing I want to do is rewind a pack 1 pick 2. Imagine uh-huh. you take Torch and like all of a sudden
you're a mess.
Able to do that. You know what I mean? Like that's that ripple effect from picks 2 through 4. Like your draft looks like, oh, I don't know where I'm going. I'm going to have to make some hard decisions. And just giving up on the power level gap between binding and torch, whatever that is, gives you so much more agency over the course of your draft.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the draft progresses. I don't end up seeing any signals. I just plod along on my blue-white good curve life, end up with some nice go-wide payoffs of I get an out cold, I get a fuss bother, I get an on the job, I have a Karlov watchdog, and then just a whole mess of two drops.
Yeah, it's good enough to draft at the PT. It's going to be good enough to draft at the Arena Open.
No Ezreum. I was expecting Ezreum to show up. Pack 2, pick 1. Did not, but I'll take it. Yeah, so I'm hoping that I can just tempo some folks out with my, it's not like super powerful, but I think it's going to be very consistent. Here's a question for you. I only have two projector inspectors. So at the PT, I had three projector inspectors and Ezrum. So I knew I wanted to get to like land six. And so I ran 18 lands. Mm-hmm. Only two projector inspectors. Curve basically stops at four in this deck. I'm running 17. How do you feel?
I feel good about that.
Okay.
That's... I've run 17 in decks like that in this format. Yeah,
that's how I'm feeling.
It's a big decision for Ethan Sachs, though.
I mean, should I not be putting weight on 17 versus 18 lands there? Does it really matter?
Like, no, I think it does. But I think your default as a human is give me any excuse to run more land. So the fact that you're trimming a land means it's probably right to trim a land.
I hate missing land drops. Like,
I also hate missing land drops.
Flooding, I don't really care that much about. Like, being stuck on two lands on turn three or four is like my least favorite thing in Magic.
All right, that takes us over to my draft, where I do not have quite as safe and cozy of a pack one, pick one, I don't think. So when I look at my pack, I've got a Dog Walker as the best common, red, white for the 3-1 Vigi with Disguise for Boros Boros, and then no uncommons really in consideration, and that takes us on to the rare, which is Prof's Eidetic Memory, one and a blue for the enchantment, ETB draw a card, you have no maximum hand size, and then the beginning of combat, however many cards you drew in excess of your first card, you get to put that many plus one counters on target creature.
Yeah, this pick makes me a little sick to my stomach, to be honest. Like, I don't know what I don't know what I would have done in the moment. Like,
oh, I thought you meant I screwed it up so badly.
No, it's just...
I was like, wow, we are... This podcast is going out to thousands of people. Be gentle.
No, I just mean that, like, it feels very close. And honestly, prior to limited testing with Sanctum, I would have said Dog Walker. But enough of them were, like, I think initially Prof's Eidetic Memory just went in the better than every uncommon pile. And I was like, whoa, is this like, does everybody agree with this? And if that's true, then that's a note for me. I got to bump this up myself. And then we chatted about it. And I think it landed somewhere still ahead of, because I would have normally put it, but yeah, below the top, whatever, handful of commons even. Like, I'm taking Inspector and Dog Walker and binding over this. And enough of them felt like, no, that's a mistake. You want to bump it up ahead of those. Like, maybe it's in the uncommons, like maybe you're taking Neighborhood Guardian over it and some other uncommons, but that it belongs in that power level tier. And so I would trust that process and take Eidetic Memory here. But the flexibility of Dog Walker is really appealing.
It is. I still, maybe I'm just wrong about this, but I still feel like Dog Walker needs other cards around it to really truly be good. And I was a little worried about why being choked. I don't know. And I also do really like Prof's Eidetic Memory. I've played with it once and been very impressed. And every time my opponent plays it, it's just a gigantic problem.
The other tiebreaker here, if we do feel like they're really close, is like, you're going to wheel a blue card.
That was what I decided. Yes.
There's three blue cards plus Flotsam Jetsam plus Thundering Falls. Like, some people don't care about the Surveil lands. And like, one of those is going to wheel, and nothing is wheeling if you take Dog Walker. And so I think if it's close, I like that as a tiebreaker as well.
Yeah, that was the final tiebreaker for me. So I did land on Prof's Eidetic Memory. Pack one, pick two, another hard choice here, I think. So there's no real uncommons in consideration. So that takes us to just looking at the commons. And very quickly, this narrows down to cards of different colors than blue. The best blue card is Reasonable Doubt in the pack. One and a blue for the instant counter target spell. And controller pays two. You're not second picking that card. So it comes down to Makeshift Binding, two and a white exile thing, gain two, or Loxodon Eavesdropper, the 3/3 elephant that makes a clue.
Yeah, I mean, because of what you said, there's no blue card to follow up. I would just treat this as a pack one, pick one. And in my pick order, I have Makeshift Binding ahead of Eavesdropper, so I would take Binding.
Yeah, I guess. But there's some amount of, like, do you want to fight for white in this pick for me? And I think when I first picked Prof's Eidetic Memory, I think if I wanted to fight for white, I would have taken Dog Walker, pack one, pick one, over Prof's Eidetic Memory. And once I didn't do that, my mentality is, I don't really want to fight for white. Plus, Eavesdropper also works very well with Prof's Eidetic Memory. Like, it does combo there. It gives you the clue. So I think it's not nothing there. I don't think this is quite pack one, pick one levels. And Prof's is going to be great in blue-white or blue-green. I don't know. It's a close pick. But this was, to me, do I want to fight for white or not? And I decided no. I didn't want to get trapped in the arena open scrapping for white.
I think that's fair. I think the thing I'm thinking about is it's so early, right? Pick two, that, like, yeah, I could be blue white with binding, but it's also way early that I can just splash binding in whatever blue deck I end up in. You also might like, what if white's open? That's the other thing is like, you all you did was pass a dog walker, like just chill, you know, like you're kind of leveling yourself here a little bit. I think if the roles were reversed, I'd be getting a real slap on the wrist from you.
I think you might be getting an earful. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was a really hard pick and I didn't know what to do. I didn't feel great about taking Eavesdropper. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was trying to ask myself when I was trying to decide, like, would I take Gardner here? Would I take, and I think I would take Binding over Gardner, but I don't know. I really like Eavesdropper in these tougher drafts where the good cards dry up a little quicker. Eavesdropper being a 2-for-1 is really nice.
I agree.
So I don't know. I took Eavesdropper, hard pick between that and Makeshift Binding. Not sure I did it right. Pack 1, pick 3. Things again, kind of interesting, I think.
Yeah.
So commons, there's double on the job, but nothing really to write home about in white. There's a Loxodon Eavesdropper number 2 versus in the uncommons Chalk Outline. 3 and a green for the enchantment. Whenever a creature card leaves your graveyard, create a 2/2 detective, then investigate. I'm really comfortable drafting the Chalk Outline roots decks at this point, and I like them a lot. And that's the kind of thing in the Arena Open where people might shy away from.
Right. Yeah, I think you could definitely make an argument for it. Here, I also think you can make an argument for if I think Eavesdropper is the pick personally, like given what you have. I think if Eavesdropper is some dud, you can make an argument for Chalk Outline. I think you could also make a real argument for Case of the Filched Falcon in on the uncommon slot. It's a card I only really like in blue red, but it pairs like Prophet's Eidetic Memory in blue red is nuts. And so I might take Case there and pop back a little bit to your pack one, pick one. And try and get deeper into blue. But
so if you take in Makeshift Binding, you're probably on Case here, right?
The blue case? Yeah, because it's that or
and on the job.
I mean, I think you could. I think Eavesdropper is still in that conversation. I'm not taking on that. Maybe I am. I don't know. I don't think I'm taking on the job third because Makeshift Binding doesn't screen. Like I said, like I'm taking it. I could be white, but I can also just easily also splash it.
Yeah.
In any deck. So I don't need to start hard committing to white for on the job. On the job feels like forcing to me when I don't need to do that yet.
Right. So I took the second Eavesdropper here and I decided Arena Open, if the Chalk Outline wheels, like then we're talking.
Yeah.
Then I'll maybe start building around.
Then we're chalking, right?
Then we're chalking. Oh, excuse me. There it is. Moving on to pack one, pick four. A little bit of like what could have been maybe here. So no commons in consideration. We're deciding between hard hitting question and a Private Eye, not even really deciding. This is hard-hitting question as the pick. Green for the sorcery, target creature you control deals damage equal to power target creature planeswalker you don't control. With double Loxodon, Eavesdropper, it's hard-hitting question here. Had we gone the blue-white route...
Right, if you're taking Binding, you would take Private Eye here.
You would take Private Eye here, yeah. And again, that's that ripple effect. But I feel fine about where we're at. I feel fine abandoning Prof's Eidetic Memory. I know with double Eavesdropper hard-hitting question, I can be base green. And once you're base green, it's pretty hard to get cut out of a functional deck.
Yeah, I mean, when all is said and done, I like your spot at the end of pick four the most of any of the iterations. Because even if you have Eidetic Memory, Binding, and now you're taking Private Eye here, like
then you're like, please, right. Is blue white open? Yeah,
please let me do it. Can I do the thing? And if they say no, you're either going to get a bad deck or you're abandoning three of your first picks. And neither of those are good spots to be in. So all said and done, I really like that you're like, okay, I now have two Eavesdroppers and a hard hitting question. I know I'm green. Green means I can do basically whatever. And I've got this great card to splash. Or I can be green blue. Like you have so many options. So I think there's a bit of a sigh of relief here for you.
Oh, for sure. And I'm not, again, not sure I got there the right way.
But we got there.
Definitely like where I'm at. Pack one, pick four. Yeah.
Yeah.
So hard hitting question. Pack one, pick five. Really feeling good now. So no commons in consideration, but there's an evidence examiner here, the blue, green, gold uncommon. So snap that up while noting an Insidious Roots in the pack.
But like you're noting the Insidious Roots, it's pick five. There's no wheel.
Yeah. See.
Okay.
See.
Okay.
So pack one, pick six. Then I'm feeling on cloud nine. No white cards in the pack and a killer among us still in the pack. Pick six. This pack either had to
and
be incredible
bite down or, on crime.
And bite down on crime, yeah. Pack is either incredible or incredible plus good white cards. Something weird happened here for killer among us to still be here. Pick six.
Yeah, you're thrilled. this is like getting the evidence after already feeling great, pick four, getting evidence examiner into Killer Among Us. Like, that's the dream.
Yeah. Pick seven, do pick up a copy of the blue case, the case of the Filch Falcon. That,
boo. What?
Do you want relieve the past?
No, I want the past? They went this way. You're too low on this card.
No, really? Yes.
Case of the Filch Falcon is not good outside of blue red. I feel so strongly about that.
It's so easy to solve in blue green.
Yeah, no, I think outside of blue red, it just puts you in really awkward spots too much of the time where you're just like, oh, I don't want to crack this clue because I want to try and solve this thing. But you're really supposed to crack the clue. And then once you do, you're never solving it. And it's just a cantrip. If this isn't your final build, I would advise against it, sir.
It is not
okay.
In my current final build, but I have questions for you about my final build. I'm not very confident in my final build. I got a lot of options
okay.
for how to do the final build. I don't know. I kind of like this here too because it's so good with profs, right? Like it puts a so combat is, trick.
So as they went this way, trick. It also makes it a clue. Like you're too low. You're too low.
Too low, huh?
Yeah.
All right. Pick eight, get a bubble smuggler. Pick
nice.
Nine, get a pick your poison for the sideboard or the main deck, whatever we choose here. Pick 10, fanatical strength. Pick 11,
ooh.
We wheel that chalk outline. So now I'm like, oh, okay, hello. And then last pick, that Insidious Roots comes back. And I'm like, okay, what are we doing now?
How are you the luckiest?
So I kind of have some more choices as we go immediately. So ooh. I'm kind of curious.
Yeah.
So what you would have done here. This draft was super fun. Like this is just a lot of spicy roots that you could have taken. So
spicy roots?
Ooh.
Tons.
I have a very good blue-green deck with no chalk outline Insidious Roots nonsense right. at the end of pack one. But we got the chalk outline and the roots, which are very good build arounds. So pack two,
and,
pick one.
And it's very clear from that
no one is interested in this
open,
life.
Right?
Yes.
That's one of the dangers of that deck is like so many different pieces have to come together. You have to get the Mavericks. You have to get the Striders. You have to get whatever. Like you can feel pretty confident that those types of cards will be available to you in pack two and pack three.
Yes. Yeah. So pack two, pick one, I already decision time. So there's a Projector Inspector, which as we've shouted out today is just a fantastic card.
Mm-hmm.
There's Gravestone Strider, a 2-mana 1/3 that filters mana, and then you can exile it from your graveyard to exile target card from a graveyard. Key piece in those chalk outline roots decks. And then two very good rares as well. There's Forensic Gadgeteer, 2 and a blue for the 2/3 when you cast an artifact spell, investigate, and activated abilities of artifacts you control cost 1 less to activate. So that makes your clues cheaper to crack. I still think Inspector is better than Gadgeteer if we're taking a blue card.
I'm not crazy about Gadgeteer personally.
Yeah, that's fair. And then in the mythic rare slot, Urgent Necropsy. This is 2 black-green for an instant as an additional cost to cast this. Collect evidence X, where X is the total mana value of permanence this spell targets. You can destroy up to 1 artifact, creature, enchantment, and planeswalker. This card I had not seen prior to being in Chicago, and it blew me out many times in Chicago. It's
from
very
yours truly, right?
Yours truly and in the PTQ.
I think Necropsy is nuts, and I would take it here. Because like either you're splashing it, or you're just going green-black and you're splashing some blue. Like, because really the only like your blue cards that you have that you're excited about are Evidence Examiner / Eidetic Memory. I would be thinking about being green-black at this point and playing Necropsy. I think Necropsy is nuts. And again, there's 4 black cards in this pack. So like if you don't wheel something good for like you're going to wheel Unscrupulous Agent. Ideally, you wheel Soul Enervation as another like payoff for stuff leaving the graveyard. Plus, it's a removal spell. But like I would take Necropsy, I think.
So I had a very similar moment to you with a Killer Among Us here. I knew if I took Necropsy, I knew there was no way I was not drafting Chalk Outline and Roots.
And so you're giving yourself outs to not to like draft just a good deck.
Just draft a good deck. Yes, yeah. that's what I decided here. Because I agree. Like I wanted to pick Necropsy, and I was like, like what do I do? Because like
that's
if this were a normal draft, I'm just slamming Necropsy blinders here. But I wasn't quite willing to pull the trigger, and I didn't feel like I could take Gravestone Strider. And if
it's too early.
Yeah. So if I take Necropsy and Strider doesn't wheel, like, I don't have any of the pieces yet, really.
Only have Evidence Examiner.
Chalk Outliner Reads. Yeah. Yeah. I have Evidence Examiner. That's it. Yeah. And Evidence Examiner would be a splash in the black green deck.
I like it. I mean, your reasoning is sound and I respect it. And the if you're making the analogy to my Killer Among Us pick of just like, look, I know what this pick means for myself in this moment, then I think I respect it.
That was the exact same conversation I had with myself. It's funny. So I did take the Projector Inspector there. And the way the draft shook out, if I had taken the Necropsy, I very much would have been black-green, would have had triple Insidious Roots, definitely an alternate life of what could have been. As it stands, I have a very good blue-green deck, total Luxac, and I opened Crashing Footfalls, pack 3, pick 1.
What a guy.
Which is a huge boon for the deck, and then wheeled Evidence Examiner
from pack 3, pick 1. And you have Case of the Locked Hothouse?
It's not in my final build.
Oh, your creature count's not that high?
Case of the Locked Hothouse? You mean land? Oh, no, my creature count's pretty high. I don't know how to build this. I also got Combine Chrysalis, which is from the list. So to sack clues to turn them into 4/4 beasts, is that too slow?
I think it's too slow.
I don't know. So I have many questions for you about my final build. Do you want me to send it to you now and we can do this on air? It seems terrible
Seems bad. We can do it off air. I think dickering and dealing, just saying a bunch of card names is going to be not quite great boring. Content. But yeah, well, I think we can leave our listeners there. We'll get to your deck building and get to hopefully getting to play another draft in the Arena Open for both of us later today.
Yeah, I think we've got two tight looking decks. Your deck looks fantastic. Very good.
I hope so. I'm slightly worried about no bombs, but what can you do?
Yeah. All right. Great place to wrap us up. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all of our content at lordsoflimited.com. Links to, also, fresh picks on the Lords Limited website from the live show. If you go to lordslimited.com, you see us up there on the main stage from Chicago. But yeah, we got links to our merch, courtesy of TeePublic, links to our tier lists, our episode backlogs are there, links to our Twitch channels, respectively, and our YouTube channel, where you can find the log, the vlog, the tlog, whatever you want to call it, from MagicCon. All of that's available on our website.
If you've got any feedback about the show, any questions, or if you've got a quick hit, what's the play? Shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. WATER to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.